Hello, hello. It's episode 40 of the Planet LP podcast. This is the place where we drop the needle on a world of albums. I'm Ted Asfragadu, and on this episode, it's the debut of a new monthly feature that I think you're going to like. At least I hope you will. How's that for a modest tease? Want to get social with us? Planet LP is social, and we'd like to be social with you, so follow along on Facebook, Planet LP, Twitter, and Instagram. We're at The Planet LP. Spotify, it's my name, Ted Asfragadu, and if you don't know how to spell the last name, it's A-S-R-E-G-A-D-O-O. You can always email me at ted@planetlp.com. If you haven't already, please subscribe to the podcast, which is on most noted platforms like Apple and Odyssey, iHeartRadio, Google Podcasts, Amazon Music, Audible, even Facebook. If you're a longtime listener, please rate us on Apple and leave a short positive review. That really helps others find Planet LP on the Apple algorithm. It kind of bubbles up and says, you might like this podcast. So I teased a new music feature, and I won't tease you anymore. So let's get started. For those who are longtime listeners to this podcast, you know that I occasionally write for a website called Popdose. One of my colleagues at Popdose collects more music in physical form than anyone I know. And that colleague is Keith Creighton. Keith wrote a piece for the site on December 31st, 2021, called An Aging Hipster's 21 Best Albums of 2021. Now, after I read Keith's post, I had this idea for a monthly feature that would spotlight new music, reissues, and current releases from legacy acts. So I pitched it to Keith. He refined it, and now it's ready for prime time. So every month, Keith will beam down to Planet LP with the Popdose New Music Report with Keith Creighton. And speaking of Keith Creighton, welcome, Keith, to Planet LP.
Hey, thanks, Ted. Great to be here. This is awesome.
Oh, I'm really happy to have you on board. Now, before we start, our inhabitants, as we call them on Planet LP, need to know, how many CDs do you buy every year if you really do purchase a lot?
I just looked at my Amazon Discogs Target list. I bought 149 discs last year.
Oh my God.
And everyone's like, just stream. Why do you spend all that money? And it's because superior fidelity.
Uh-huh.
And even my vinyl friends are very much like, how come you don't buy vinyl? And I do buy some vinyl. I think I bought maybe 20 titles on vinyl last year, but I'm a dad on the go, and I love just throwing a CD in the dashboard of the car when I'm back at home. It's just superior fidelity. And no matter how much you play an album, it never sounds worse on the second, third, and 300th play. So I'm all in on the CD still.
I am too. I mean, I have a pretty good turntable. I have a Technics 1200. That was the coveted DJ model that everyone wants now, but I don't have any room to set it up. So I have vinyl, but I don't buy it anymore because I have no means to play it. But I do buy CDs, but I don't buy 149 a year. That's an incredible amount. That's a lot of dough that you spend on CDs. Where do you put it all? Do you sell any back? Like, do you think, I bought this and I thought, okay, I gave it a shot, but yeah, I'm not feeling it. Do you do that sort of used record store thing where you'll take them back to a used record store and get a credit back to buy something else?
I am one of those people that has probably in the last 5 years rebought most of the titles I sold back to record stores back in the day. Uh-huh. You kind of get in a mood where you want to rediscover an album again. And you're like, oh, I got rid of that. And you start kicking yourself. So I've decided I'm going to keep them all until the day I drop over. And then my daughter can either open up a Discog store or just donate in general to the local Goodwill. And I think there's a lot of that out there. I'm on a Facebook group called the Compact Disc Collectors Cave. And some of the members of there will go to their local Goodwills and come back with 100 titles in a single purchase that they got for 25 cents each. I've been to my local Goodwill and there's nothing like that. But other parts of the world, man, Goodwills are treasure troves because everyone's abandoning their CD collections. And you could buy things for like pennies on the dollar, if not just buying cartloads by the pound.
I'm just waiting for the record labels or the record companies to start to move away from the vinyl craze and then resell CDs again to us, even though they're now for 25 cents or sometimes free. And people think, oh, CDs, that's such an old format. It's a dead format. Nobody cares about it anymore. But like you said, it's superior audio quality. It doesn't degrade over repeated plays. Unless you drop the CD, scratch it, it'll stay fairly pristine. It will not change. The audio quality will not change through time and through plays. I'm wondering if at one point they're going to say, well, we have this new superior CD format. Well, they did have. They had SCADs. You remember that? The Super Audio. I can't remember if it was Super Audio compact disc. And it did sound better. I have Roxy Music's Avalon on SCAD. And when I put that on, boy, my speakers sound pretty nice. It all the audio that comes out of that. I'm like, holy crap, that really sounds so much better than the original CD that I bought or even the vinyl that I bought originally. So.
Anyway. And there's a lot of titles out there that now have like the Steven Wilson, I think like 5.1 surround sound mix. And I'm not quite there yet, but like one of the best sounding discs in my collection is the Police albums box set, where the vinyl version got a nice deluxe where they put a big booklet, lots of editorial, all that kind of stuff. And the CD was just bare bones. Here's all the albums they produced in their little thin cardboard sleeves. But oh my God, the sound on that disc is mind-blowing.
I have that as well. And I think they remastered all those albums at Abbey Road. It does have a warmer sound. Like I have Zenyatta Mandata that they did one of the remasters. And they've, you know, that's what happens with these labels. They remaster often with older titles. And so I bought one sort of randomly and put it in. It was super bright. And I know that we're talking about music like wine snobs talk about wine, but there you is a brightness. It comes out of your speakers and it's a little shrill on the ears. But the box set, it's very, very pleasant to listen to. And I feel like they've tried to find a point when they did the remaster to find a kind of warmer sound that sometimes CDs tend to not have. They tend to overcompensate on the low end and the high end. Some mastering person, audio engineer, had said, CDs make shitty speakers sound better. That's really what it does.
Oh, okay. Got it. Yeah.
And I'm like, nah, that's not really that true.
So when I listened to the Prince Sign of the Times box that I bought, I spent $500. I bought it on vinyl and CD. And you can really appreciate the warmth in the vinyl and having that many tracks to listen to. Vinyl is just such an unwieldy way to listen to it. So even though it sounds better, I burn the heck out of my CDs. I don't play the vinyl that much.
So most of our podcast listeners know that in addition to hosting this podcast, I occasionally write for sites like Pop Dose or Ultimate Classic Rock and Music Tap. I also work in radio for iHeartMedia in San Francisco. So besides your music writing, Keith, what's your day job?
I'm a copywriter. Even though I write about music and gender identity stuff for my passion, I write for corporations of all sizes. I do editorial that shows up in their blogs, their op-ed pieces, website content. I love the fact that now for 11 years, I've been able to make a living as a writer. And part of that came from the inspiration of when I was a fan of Pop Dose for years, back before a lot of the individual writers had individual blogs, and then they united as a supergroup to put all their stuff together for Pop Dose. And I was a super fan, super commenter. And then in 2012, Jeff invited me to say, hey, why don't you come write for us? And I've been writing for him ever since. And it changed the course of my life.
Nice. The editor-in-chief, Jeff Giles, he was on the Planet OP podcast. He was talking about Yacht Rock a while back. It. Yeah, that was a lot of fun.
You know, I kind of do the new music beat. You know, I look at my top 10 album or top 21 albums of 2021. And there was a lot of new artists in there, including my number one, which was a cowpunk group called Volk. But I do love the fact that we're in an era now where a lot of legacy artists, instead of just doing the legacy nostalgia concert tour circuit, are putting out the best music of their careers this late into their careers. I mean, even looking at the Cheap Trick and Lindsey Buckingham records that came out last year, those rank up among their all-time best. And so it's just great to see people that are not coasting on their laurels or resting on their laurels, but, you know, really kind of putting out stuff that feels of their signature sound, but also fits right in with the modern musical landscape. So I'm just a kid in heaven right now.
That is the theme of this edition of the Pop Dose New Music Report with Keith Creighton. It is about legacy acts putting out music that is some of the best of their career. Let's start with the first band, Duran Duran. Their new album is called Future Past. Talk a little bit about that.
We're in this amazing, I call it the Duranaissance right now.
Love it.
Because here they came, you know, down the pike with their first three albums, which are perfect, like as perfect as a trilogy could ever be. You know, it's the Star Wars of music from back in the 80s.
Okay, so if that's the case, which one of those three is Jedi?
Definitely Empire would be the Duran, the Rio album, because, yeah, you know, it was had all those dark undertones and all that kind of stuff. And then
Rio, the New
Snake
Hope
and all that, yeah, that, that's the Jedi record.
Oh, know? Okay. So Seven and the Ragged Tiger, yeah, ends up being the... ends up being the Ewok album. Okay.
But it's a good one. But yeah, you, when you listen to some of those lyrics, like the reflex, mm-hmm, you know, what is he singing about? It's a game. Is it a game that people play? Is it a mind game or is it a board game? It's kind of strange.
Is it a lonely child? Is it a lonely child? I don't know. Yeah. Yeah.
But that's the magic of Duran Duran, is the fact that it's kind of punk. It's very stylish. Simon's lyrics could either hit you like a ton of bricks, like Save a Prayer, or make no sense at all. I mean, listen to the Wild Boys and Union of the Snake. Like, what is he talking about?
Well, the first line of Union of the Snake doesn't make any sense. I remember when that song came out, I was like, what the hell? Is it just word salad? Is that what it is?
Yeah, I've never been too much of a lyrics, you know, like, okay, great, Sweet Child of Mine will hit you like, you know, oh my God, I totally feel that kind of emotion for a girl. Mm-hmm. But I love it when lyrics make no sense, because then the voice is just kind of like part of the instruments and you can just love it and not have to be too attached to a story.
What stands out on this album? What are the tracks that immediately grab you and you think, wow, I can't believe it's 2021. And well, it was when they released it. It's 2022 now when we're recording this. But when you first heard the record, what are the tracks that stood out?
Or, oh my God, Hammerhead mm-hmm. is just amazing. Like, it just has this groove to it where it just sounds unlike anything else, but also it's such a modern track. Since I'm not like a seasoned music journalist that could look at all the influences are and here's the kind of styles that they're kind of bringing into the mix, I'm just like, okay, do I have a gut reaction to it? Like, is it my Marie Kondo record? Does it spark joy? Anniversary just shows how good it is when Simon just gets a big word that he could kind of just like turn into a hook. And I love Tove Lo. She's guests on the third track, Give It All Up.
That one definitely stood out for me. That I really like that track a lot.
I have not heard of any of the other features on there, but that's kind of the amazing thing, is they scoured the world to bring in voices that would really kind of move this record forward. And so instead of being like an all-star record, like the Elton John duets thing, mm-hmm. which is a good record, it creates this beautifully cohesive album. I love the fact that they've always kind of had a Giorgio Moroder sound, and then they finally brought Giorgio Moroder in to produce one of the tracks on this record.
You talked about some of the newer, well, as you said, they scoured the globe and looking for folks that they could work with. So there's British rapper Ivorian Doll, Japanese band named Chai that's on there, and both very good songs. And looking at the title, Future Past, there is definitely a futuristic style to this, if you want to call it more contemporary style, to their music now. But the past part of it seemed to come up in a couple of songs to me. Tonight United and Wing. They sound like the most like early Duran Duran. The first song, the single, Invisible, when I first heard it, I thought, wow, the music sounds like a Prince song. Did that kind of remind you a little bit of Prince?
Yeah, especially with Invisible, when I first heard it, I didn't connect with it. I was like, okay, this is just not what I was expecting, because I was really a huge fan still of All You Need Is Now, which was their 2010 record. You know, that was such a return to form of the classic, you know, trilogy sound. And so Invisible was just so outside of that box that I kind of rejected it at first. And then once I kind of got into the rest of the record, then I kind of went back to track one, and then it suddenly made a place for me.
So the guys spoke to Rolling Stone magazine in the summer of 2021 about the new record, Future Past. They sat down with Rob Sheffield, sort of a wide-ranging interview, but they spoke also about the importance of dance music to the Duran Duran sound. So here's a clip from that interview.
Well, we very much embraced dance music, obviously, right from the very beginning. And actually, that was going against the grain for cool indie rock music at that time. Nobody really thought it was cool enough. But for us, it seemed to be just the right fit, because yeah. we wanted people to dance. Yes. And we were in an environment, as Roger said at the Rum Runner, where we were watching people dancing every night yeah. and kids having fun. And we wanted to be part of that and
that
to create that.
Always one of the ongoing conversations we have is like, what defined new wave? Mm. What defines new wave from punk? Mm. You know, and actually, I think Roger said new wave, You kind of had to be able to dance to it, as opposed to just jump up and down. Yeah. You know, and that was that awareness, that sensibility that just started coming in post-punk, where suddenly you got like, you know, four on the floor or young musicians that had been thinking, oh yeah, good times, Another One Bites the Dust, Miss You, it's kind of cool, you know, maybe, or James Brown, right? Mm-hmm. And thinking like, or Donna Summer, and thinking, let's have a bit of that.
They don't do a bit of that. They don't go back to, say, the artists that they're referencing. Instead, they're looking almost at dance music now. And there is the future, I guess. And the past is, of course, that Duran Duran's been around for so long that they're kind of hooked into that sort of great chain of being of dance music in a way.
I was going to mention, as part of the Duranissance, there's four documentaries that all of your listeners could find relatively easily on streaming services. There was the documentary that Showtime put out 2 years ago called There's Something You Should Know. Mm-hmm. And then if you're on Prime, their IMDb channel has the classic album series, which Access TV also runs reruns on, where they focus in on Rio. And then our colleague, Annie Zaleski from Popdose, wrote the book on Rio, right, for the 33 and a third series. Paramount Plus has the brand new episode of Behind the Music with Duran Duran. And when you kind of process all of those in a short period, you could really appreciate what they have brought to the table in terms of where punk was in, you know, when they started off in the early 80s, and then how they kind of brought all the dance elements in from like the Giorgio Moroder stuff that they loved, and kind of what they did in the 80s. And then it's been fascinating to see the track of their career and how they kind of lost momentum in the mainstream, mm-hmm. and then all of a sudden came back with a major hit in the early 90s, and then disappeared again all the way until the late 2000s.
And just FYI, we did have Annie Zaleski on the Planet LP podcast when she released the book Rio. It was very revealing because I was in high school when that album came out, and I didn't think too much about it. I was like, eh, it's all right. I mean, some good songs on there. Not realizing how much of a staying power this album would have, not only in popular culture, but also as far as music longevity, that this record really did have a lot of staying power. And Annie did a great job in showing how this record came together, but also just the amount of archival material she was able to dig through, whether it was newspaper interviews or interviews with the band and people associated with the album. Fantastic read. Can't recommend it enough. So definitely get that book by Annie Zaleski. Is definitely a must read.
Yeah, I think it's our biggest claim to fame right now is that since we know Annie and knows Duran Duran, we are 2 degrees from Duran Duran right now.
Here's somebody I don't know personally, but I do know as far as her footprint in the music culture, and that's Debbie Gibson. She released a new album called The Body Remembers. Well, it was new last year in 2021.
Yeah.
So I like this more than I thought I would. I talk a lot about my radio career when I first started. And when I was first on the air, out of the blue, the Debbie Gibson album that had a lot of hits off of it came out. And so I played it a lot. I was on sort of a top 40-ish radio station. So we played a lot of Debbie Gibson. The problem of being in radio and having to play an artist over and over is the burnout factor. So I never really appreciated her voice, her songwriting abilities, her presence. I just thought she was just a teeny bopper, which she was, but she's not a teeny bopper anymore. She's in her 40s and she's still producing music. And here is one that sounds very contemporary. If you like pure dance floor goodness, this is one to get, I would say. But you highlighted it in your piece for Popdose. So talk a little bit about this record. What is it about it that stood out to you?
Before I talk about the new album, set up how Debbie Gibson actually changed, maybe even saved my life. She came out in 1988. And when you remember, especially the Out of the Blue video that was played on MTV, kind of set the stage later on for the Robin Sparkles character on How I Met Your Mother. Remember, she did the Sandcastles in the Sand video when it was discovered that the Robin character was a Canadian pop star back in the day. They modeled that on the Debbie Gibson Out of the Blue video.
Okay.
And so we used to have one Debbie Gibson track at our college radio station. She had a soundtrack single. And so occasionally we would a little bit mercilessly play a little bit of Debbie Gibson in the middle of a punk rock show. And then the phone would start lighting up, like, why are you playing this? And we would go then right into something like by Ministry, you know, just to, you know, it's like, ah, we fooled you guys. And so, so as a birthday gift, they bought me the Out of the Blue cassette as a kind of a gag gift. Well, cut to a couple of weeks later, my girlfriend breaks up with me. I'm devastated. And in the glove compartment of my car are just cassettes by Sisters of Mercy, Bauhaus, all this really depressing stuff, the Smiths, you know, and all of a sudden they're like the sunlight shone upon the Out of the Blue cassette. And so I unwrapped it and I put it on and the beat started coming out. And I just started noticing I was tapping my toe and tapping my fingers against the steering wheel. And I just became the biggest fan and it never let up. I do love the fact that just like we're in a Duranaissance, we're kind of in a big Debussance right now. Because a couple of years ago, Edsel Records collected all of her mainstream albums on Atlantic, plus all the self-release stuff, into a major box set, gorgeous, gorgeous box set called We Could Be Together. Unfortunately, I was checking around before we did the podcast here, and it's out of print. It's going for $600 on eBay, but hopefully Edsel does another run with it because it stitches together all of her amazing albums. When you look at her career in a snapshot, like she had an amazing run, and the 10th disc on that, you know, showcased, okay, here's what else is in the closet, including some new tracks. And when you listen to the new tracks, you're like, wow, she still has a lot of gas in the tank. Like creatively, her voice was still there. And so when she finally came out with this first new album in more than 20 years, I was just blown away. Some of the tracks remind me a little bit of the Kylie Minogue sound, and Kylie Minogue is currently doing her disco era. She kind of sings in a higher register, very, very Kylie, very, very disco. But then when she kind of finds her groove again and she does tracks that purely sound like pure Debbie Gibson, it's just amazing, especially like the title track, The Body Remembers. Just beautiful stuff.
So I have to do some corrections before we get hit on social media about Debbie Gibson. I said she was in her 40s. She's 51 years old as of this recording. And Out of the Blue came out in 87, not 88. Just to keep the pack at bay. Say, no, I know people make errors. It happens. But yeah, that was the
She's
year that
50, fabulous. Because for a while, she's been doing cameos. I noticed a bunch of my friends on Facebook would get Debbie Gibson cameos and play them on their feeds. And so I started following her on Instagram. And here's one of the fun things I love, because on some of the reissues, they're putting out her original concert DVDs. And I did see the Electric Youth Tour at Blossom Music Center in Ohio. And I love that Debbie Gibson on Instagram is still friends with one of her backup dancers, Buddy Casimano. He was doing all these amazing backflips during her shows, which are on the DVDs that are now coming out on Cherry Pop. And they're also in the Edsel box set. But I love that he now has a beard. He kind of looks like Santa Claus, and he and Debbie are still buddies. And I just think that is the greatest thing in the world.
Well, that's good. She's a very genuine person. So one of the things that I noticed about this record, and it kind of compares to Duran Duran, is that like Simon Le Bon's voice, his voice sounds great. Her voice sounds great. It almost hasn't changed since 1987. She can still hit those high notes. And she does a big duet with Joey McIntyre from New Kids on the Block. He's not a kid anymore, obviously, but she did an interview with a podcast called Vegas Revealed, where she lives in Las Vegas. And this was in May of 2021, where she talks a little bit about the duet Lost in Your Eyes with Joey McIntyre.
Literally like the most asked question on my socials and my DMs and in my threads. Timing really is everything. Like it just wasn't the moment till now for some strange reason. And we recorded it live on the road and we listened, we're like, no, I think we could do something that like harkens back to the original, but feels really modern and current. And it just feels so elegant and spacious. And it's so, it gets me every time to hear our voices together recorded. It's really wild.
That original single, Lost in Your Eyes, was from Electric Youth, which was her follow-up to Out of the Blue. So she redid it with Joey McIntyre, and as she said, it was probably the most asked about things on social media, and people were direct messaging her, and when is this coming out? And it does stand out on the album. I mean, it's nice. It's very pleasant to listen to, and she's right. It does have a kind of elegant feel to it now. You know, it's sort of been beefed up for 2021 because well, Debbie's 51 and Joey McIntyre, I'm sure he's probably around the same age as her. So they're not going to sound like little kids anymore, or little, you know, teenagers.
Yeah, I kind of wish they put it on at the end of the album, because it does take you out of the moment, because you're in this very current, very disco kind of sound. And then all of a sudden, it's like, you remember when Christopher Reeve sees the penny at the end of Somewhere in Time? Spoiler alert, it's been 40 years. If you haven't seen it, sorry. But, you know, it takes you out of the moment. And So all of a sudden, I was like, it was almost like a segue from like a Donnie and Marie variety show. And it's very lovely. I mean, I love the single. I'm glad it's on the disc. But it would have been almost better at the end as kind of like a little coda to the whole thing, because the rest of the album is very current, very tight, very high energy. You know, I'd really love the Freedom song, which is a duet with, I think, a guy named DJ Ashba, or just Ashba, and never heard of him. But oh my God, he does these big arena performances with the lasers and like a very high energy dance show. And so she partnered with him, and it's a very current track. I love, you know, when she kind of focuses on the now, it's just amazing.
We're going to move on to our next selection, which you and I are big fans of this group. And well, millions were. And then they kind of maybe hid it from people. But when this group released their album called Voyage, and that would be ABBA, boy, oh boy, did the ABBA fans come out of the woodwork saying, I've always loved this band. I'm like, really? Where were you back when I was getting pelted about my ABBA fandom? I never lost my love for this band. I always thought that they were great pop singers, great pop songcrafters, and the sound was so unique in terms of what was on pop radio at the time. So they release what I believe is going to be their final album, called Voyage. And it's certainly reflective of music from people who are in their mid-70s. Obviously, you love this record because you spotlighted it in the Pop Dose piece. But what is it about the record that you love so much?
They keep being coy that this is their final record. But now the girls, because Benny and Bjorn were like, oh, this was such a pleasure to work on, we could do it again, but we don't know if we can get the girls to do it. And then now you get Frida in some interviews saying, never say never. It was the album that nobody thought would happen. I have 4 coffee table books on ABBA, and the narrative thread throughout is, to quote from Taylor Swift, we are never, ever getting back together. All of a sudden they did. And here's the thing. I think Benny and Bjorn had talked for years in interviews in the 90s and the 2000s that they didn't want to ruin the magic of the original run, which when you realize from Eurovision through the masterpiece that is The Visitors was only about 8 years. Adele just spent 6 years between albums. They did so much. And now that those songs are so iconic because of the Mamma Mia movies and the stage play,
good point.
We thought we can never capture that lightning in a bottle again. And so then they were probably tossed with, do we try to do something new and modern that's reflective of who we are now, or do we try to go back to that original well? And on this album, they did both. There are some songs on there that you could just totally picture the cast singing in Mamma Mia 3. And I know that was one of the big contentions that they're talking about doing a third movie is, well, do we have enough music? Well, if Benny and Bjorn can keep writing music like this, they've got more than enough fodder for a third movie. When you think about like Don't Shut Me Down, that is as good as Waterloo and some of the classic stuff from the original run. But then I'm a big fan of the latter ABBA albums, Super Trooper, yep. The Visitors, and the singles that came out after The Visitors that never made it onto another album, because those were very sophisticated pop works. The production, the lyrics, just the overall performance was really head and tails above what else was happening in the early 80s. And so the fact that the second half of the album really kind of taps back into that kind of stuff with Keep an Eye on Dan and Bumblebee and No Doubt About It, I'm like, oh my God, it gave me chills that this album could actually happen and then sound as good as it did. And I didn't really gravitate to it at first. When I first listened to it, I'm like, oh, okay, I was kind of going to the I Still Have Faith in You and the kind of really saccharine Christmas song, Little Things.
Oh my God, yeah. I had to skip that one a few times because, like you, I wasn't feeling it at first. I was like, oh, I don't know about this. But apparently you kind of like this one, right? You like the Christmas
song? And once again, just like with, as we were saying with Duran Duran with Invisible, the tracks that I didn't love at first, once I got to know the balance of the album, because you figure we have not had an ABBA record in 40 years. And so all of a sudden to have 10 new songs to digest all at once was in a way almost overwhelming. And so I've been really enjoying subsequent listens. And I keep telling people that kind of diss it on their socials, give it some time, go back and play it again and again. And I'm just loving it. It reveals a little bit more every time I listen to it. So I'm hoping that if they're all up for it, that they get back into their routine where they could maybe put out two or three more records. Why not?
We have a colleague who used to write for Popdust, a guy named John Hughes. He no longer writes for the site. He is a big shot over at Rhino Records, and he knows ABBA. He was kind of involved a little bit in somewhat of this making of this record. He'd gone to Sweden. I believe he met them. His favorite album, like your favorite album, and one of my favorites is the, well, not the last one, but the last one they had produced in that run, was The Visitors. I remember, you call it a masterpiece, but I remember when it came out, I used to read Rolling Stone religiously, and they reviewed it and gave it 1.5 stars. They thought it was one of their worst records. And I was all like, wait, did you not listen to the title track? Did you not listen to all the other songs on there? The title track alone is, to me, a reason to get that record, because it sounds so un-ABBA, except for the voices and everything, but just the whole production, the feel of it, it's very dark.
It's a sci-fi movie in a 6-minute song. Yeah. You know, it's like you could just picture alien invasion and big lights coming in the house and windswept hair and dresses as the girls are kind of running around. And so, but is it an alien invasion? Or are they talking about immigration? Or are they talking about memories? You have no idea.
Yeah,
as a kid, I was really into Steven Spielberg movies. And it really, if you just kind of close your eyes and do a little movie, like imagine an alien invasion, all the lyrics fit perfectly, especially with the big epic synth breaks. You know, the hooks in The Visitors are so huge. So I could just picture like the alien, you know, like the lights swirling all around the house and the winds coming in. And yeah, it really captured my imagination because like you, as a kid, being an ABBA fan in rural Ohio in the 70s and 80s was like a crucifix. You I had a little Daffy Dan's t-shirt and man, did I get picked on for that.
I was in high school when The Visitors came out. So my big bands then were like Rush. Rush was really big with me in high school. So I ran this gamut, this weird gamut of very sort of hard progressive-y rock. And then there was ABBA.
Yeah.
And how do you square that circle? I don't know. I guess you don't. But getting back to the new record, Frida, one of the A's in ABBA, her real name is Ani Fried, she called into the BBC in November of 2021 to talk about the new record, her motivation behind going into the studio, and the public's reaction to the album. So she called, literally called on the phone. So you're going to hear it sound like a telephone because she is on the telephone.
Of course we are pleased because we didn't expect anything actually. And you know, it's always like you're a bit nervous when you release something new. But if I compare it to how it was 40 years ago, it's a bit of a difference because I would personally say I don't take it that seriously as I would do earlier on when I was younger, because then it meant so much. But as Benny said in an earlier interview, we don't have to prove anything. So we have just done it for the fun of it. And that's a good feeling, actually. And then when people like it, that they seem to do, then of course it's wonderful.
She did say they did it for the fun of it and she had a good time doing it. So perhaps there's more ABBA music in the future. One can hope.
Yeah, and here's the fun little fact on this. ABBA and the Adele record were credited in bringing CD sales back up for the first time in many, many years. You know, they always say, okay, vinyl, 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 but those titles sold tons and tons of CDs, like 10 times as many, you know, units on CD as vinyl. So it shows that there's still a fan base out there. I just think ABBA sounds so perfect on CD. You know, I go back through and listen to all their old records. They all still sound as sonically perfect today, thanks to the miracle of the CD, as they did back in the day. You know, because I first bought everything on cassette. And so then I had to rebuy everything on CD. And then there's been several different reissues. And here's another fun fact I've learned recently is that The Visitors was actually the first mainstream pop record produced on CD, but not released on CD.
Really?
Yeah, it was the first one manufactured, but then due to some delays on the release date, another title, like I think in the United States, Born in the USA by Springsteen was the first one to hit the market. But then that was the first one, I think, released internationally on CD. So The Visitors has a nice little place in CD history.
That is some good trivia there. So let's get to some, maybe not the ones that we're going to super spotlight, but ones that you wanted to talk about as sort of honorable mentions or, hey, and by the way, while you're at the record store or on Amazon or wherever you're shopping, you might want to pick up these as well. One was Manic Street Preachers. That was a UK band that's been making music since the early 90s. They started as a band in 86, but they had a new record out in 2021. Talk about that one.
Yeah. So the big thing that happens when a lot of music critics and did my piece for Poptos, we do our best albums of the previous year. They're kind of as, okay, we're going to leave all those albums in last year. I love the fact that these aren't like movies that have a little box office run and then go away. So even though it came out last year, this is still an album that's truly worth discovering. And 2021 just had so many good records that it's hard to listen to them all. Mm-hmm. And so now I'm really enjoying the fact that now that I've written my piece and I don't have to worry about enjoying music for an editorial purpose and just the pleasure of listening. The Ultra Vivid Lament is their latest record. And it's just beautiful. So if you like really harmonic Britpop, gorgeous, soulful lyrics, beautiful, lush production, the Manic Street Preachers are for you. Because I got into them back in the time when pulp in the mid-90s was kind of hitting their heyday. I was so into the pulp sound from the Different Class record, Common People, waiting for This Is Hardcore, which came out a couple of years later, was just excruciating. So I started getting into all the other Britpop bands. Blur at the time started off lush and romantic, and then they started entering their weird phase, where vice versa, Manic Street Preachers started off very anti-pop and then hit this lush, gorgeous pop phase right at the perfect time in the mid-90s. And so when you go back and listen to some of their mid-90s stuff, it's just gorgeous. And I love how the Ultra Vivid Lament completely captures that kind of majesty and beauty. There is a fun deluxe version of it available. You can get it on Amazon, 2 discs, you know, so you get the full deluxe version of the album and then a full disc of their demos and early tracks for this record in a gorgeous booklet. Looks like a hardcover book. Mm-hmm. You know, it's the same size as James, another band of the era that's still putting out amazing records, put out All the Colors of You. And the same thing, an oversized deluxe book. You put those two on side by side and it's just some of the most gorgeous music you're going to hear.
The James album was one that you also had on your list that you gave to me. I listened to that the other day for the first time. And man, talk about a pandemic album. The lyrics alone are really reflective of 2020 and 2021 and apparently 2022 as well. Yeah. But yeah, that's very much, oh my God, we're all being shut in and what's going to happen to us. So there's a bit of a bleakness to it. For Manic Street Preachers, the song that really stood out to me was Happy Bored Alone. Great guitar work. I love the chorus, and it has this kind of anthemic and soaring quality to it. I kept coming back to that track on the record. They're all very good, but you know how certain tracks just kind of stand out on first or second listens.
Yeah.
And that was one I kept kind of coming back to.
Yeah, this is a record for me that is an album where I put it on, and I get completely lost in the album. And I don't even really kind of pay attention to particular tracks, you know, because there's some bands that are complete singles bands. And you can really gravitate to the ones you really like. And with this particular record, I think it works cohesively as a start to finish piece. And so I just kind of put it on, and whether I'm driving or I'm around the house, I just get completely swept away in almost like each song is a movement in a bigger concerto. And I love the whole thing, kind of soup to nuts. And so I haven't really kind of tuned in on a particular piece.
Last one on the list is Kylie Minogue. And she released an album in 2021, which is almost, it was a redo or an expanded version of one that she did in 2020 called Disco.
Yeah. Kylie, especially in 2021, released an expanded deluxe version of her Disco record, just like Dua Lipa put out a third configuration of Future Nostalgia. Mm-hmm. And Jessie Ware also put out, who went on a great disco with one of the great unsung records of 2020, which is What's Your Pleasure, on perfect disco pop record that then she put out a second expanded full disc version, so a full 2 CD version this last year. So I just love kind of when we're talking about this theme that Kylie Minogue is not only still around, but Kylie Minogue has never gone away. You know, she started in the late 80s. And you think, okay, she's a TV star from Australia, putting out some very light pop records. And the fact is, she has consistently released amazing records, because prior to this disco era, she did like a country album. I just love the fact that Kylie Minogue just keeps going and going and going. She's the Energizer Bunny of pop.
That she is. So let's recap the records that we talked about from start to finish and go ahead and give the titles and run them down the list, Keith.
It's Duran Duran, Future Past, ABBA, Voyage, Debbie Gibson, The Body Remembers, James, All the Colors of You, and Manic Street Preachers, The Ultra Vivid Lament. So in addition to Kylie Minogue's Disco, and then, man, I can go on and on about Lindsey Buckingham, Cheap Trick, Crowded House.
I almost want to be like that SNL skit. Lindsey Buckingham, we're out of time.
Oh my God, have we just done that to him? Yeah, we're at the end of this thing, and now we can't talk about how great Lindsey Buckingham is.
Lindsey, are you mad at me? Come on, Lindsey.
Okay, next time you have me on, let's lead with Lindsey Buckingham.
We'll lead with Lindsey Buckingham. Maybe I'll come out and sing a little song, too. Maybe not. That'll really send people running to the exits. Well, Keith, I want to thank you for being on the Planet LP podcast and talking about your new feature that's going to come on every month called the Pop Dose New Music Report with you, Keith Creighton.
So we'll see you. Such a pleasure. Thanks for having me.
We'll see you down the road sometime soon. And that's it for another episode. As always, thank you, Planet LP inhabitants, for listening. I'll be back soon to drop the needle on a world of albums.